Our gospel verse this morning is from John chapter 15, verses 9 through 17. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. I have said these things to you so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. I do not call you servants any longer, because the servant does not know what the master is doing, but I have called you friends because I have made known to you everything that I have heard from the Father. You did not choose me, but I chose you, and I appointed you to go and bear fruit, fruit that will last, so that the Father will give you whatever you ask of him in my name. I am giving you these commandments so that you may love one another. The word of the Lord.
When I recently went to Israel, flew out of Newark, New Jersey. And it was interesting there when we got to the gate to load our plane to find out that a couple dozen of these Orthodox Jewish men were going to be joining our flight. I know you've all seen them. They're the guys with the dark pants, the white shirts. They've got their tassels from their prayer shawls hanging out below their shirts. They wear those long, dark coats. They wear those big black hats with the big brims. And they have the sideburns here, the curly sideburns. And about two dozen of them were joining our plane, and it was really fascinating to be able to observe them up close and personal. While we were waiting to board the plane, you know, the rest of us are all standing in line, looking at our watches and complaining about why it's taking so long. They were gathered over to the side, and they were all facing what I took to be the east, which is Jerusalem, and they were all praying together. And they do that interesting, they bob, you know, back and forth while they pray. And they were praying right there in the airport, and I thought, that is impressive. On the plane, when it came time for them to serve breakfast, because it was morning wherever we are, although in those transatlantic flights you never know what time it is. But anyway, it was time for them to say their morning prayer. So all of them got up and got in, went into their little carry-on luggage, and they start pulling out the stuff they needed for their morning prayer, which was a prayer shawl, their little yarmulke, their little beanie hat there, and then they have what these prayer things they call phylacteries. It's a little box about that big, and in it are certain scriptures, and they tie one on their head, and they lash one of them to their arms by wrapping it around and around. So they get all set like that, and then they sat there in their seats in the plane with their prayer books and bowing and saying their little morning prayer. And when it got done, they put it all away. It's just fascinating, this way of displaying their faith. One more encounter with them. In the Tel Aviv airport, as I was coming back, it was morning, and you've got time to kill in an airport. And airports all around the world are all the same. I mean, you've got McDonald's there, you've got food courts, you've got duty-free shops, you've got the little souvenir shop, you've got all of those all around. And in the midst of all of these shops, there was an interesting little one, and it had these Orthodox Jewish gentlemen there. And I couldn't tell exactly what it was because it was all in Hebrew. But they were standing there, and when people walked by, they invited them to come. And what I figured out they were doing is they were offering them an opportunity to say their morning prayers. And they had all the paraphernalia for it in case you forgot it while you were traveling. So they would call people over, and they would have the little yarmulke for you. They'd have that thing that you had on your head, on your arm. They'd have a prayer shawl. They'd have the prayer book. So right there in the airport, you could say your morning prayers. That is impressive. It puts me to shame. I don't sit around in airports giving people the opportunity to say their morning prayers there. As admirable as it was, though, I kind of remember Jesus saying some advice about prayer in public. Jesus wasn't so concerned that we say our prayers in public, but he did have very solid advice on how we should live out our faith. In fact, today he even had a command to give us. He commanded us to love one another. Now, isn't that odd? How can you command love? We are so often think that love is primarily an emotion. And as an emotion, you either have it or you don't. You can't control it, right? Think back to when you first fell in love with your spouse. Could someone have commanded you to do that? To have that feeling that only you have for them? No, it's an emotion. It's not under a control. And like all emotions, it has its ups and downs, romantic love, right? I love to tell young couples that are getting married, I say, that romantic love is going to come and go. Some mornings you're going to wake up and look at the person next to you lying there and think, oh, I couldn't be happier. I have found my soulmate. I have been so richly blessed. And other mornings you're going to wake up and think, who is this person that I'm lying next to? Have I made the biggest mistake in my life? And I say, that's all natural. That's the way emotions work. That's why the Bible assumes that there's more to love. That love is more a matter of will. It's also a way of acting in a loving way, even though you may not be feeling it. And it's a matter of choice. And the good news is, even though Jesus commanded us to do this, he didn't expect us to go out and try real hard and experience it just on ourselves. Instead, Jesus says, I'm going to show you how to do this. I'm going to let you experience. I'm going to walk you through every step of it. And here's how Jesus sees it. Do I have a slide? All good. And just leave this up then. I have to tell you about the first service. I was working on my sermon kind of late last night. And I didn't come up with this slide until late last night, so I come running in before the first service and say, can you insert this into the presentation? And they said, no problem, no problem. Well, guess what? Not only wouldn't it insert, but it crashed the whole system. For half the first service, we didn't have any screens up there. Oh, well. Anyway, here we have it. And wasn't it worth it, this elaborate, wonderful slide? Here's the way Jesus sees it. That we are to simply partake in a chain of love. It starts with the Father, as he says. The Father has loved me, the Son. His love for me has been absolutely unconditional. He's poured himself out for me. And he says, now I, because I've experienced that kind of love, pour myself out to you. And he says, I expect now that you've actually experienced this love. It's nothing you had to work up inside yourself. It's been given to you as an absolute gift. I expect that to overflow from you and be shared with others. It's a gift. It's an experience. We just take our place into it. Jesus said, I've already laid down my life for you. That's how much I love you. That's how much of my love has already been shown to you. He said, you didn't choose me, I chose you. I came after you, I sought you out. You know, we worry so much about our achievements. We look at our worthiness or lack of worthiness. We judge ourselves relentlessly, and we turn that same judgment upon other people. Instead, though, if we could simply grasp and understand that this chain of love is what is going on, that we're part of this love that flows from the Father to Jesus to us to others, then we can move from our anxious, separate, inadequate lives, and we recognize we're part of this holy communion that's going on. And when we realize that we don't have to grab or hold or possess this life as if it were some kind of scarce commodity, it's always coming our way. It's abundant beyond measure. God doesn't measure out God's Spirit when he gives it to the Son or to us. And if you know this, in a deep sense of having comprehended and taken part in this love chain, you have grasped what Jesus is ultimately about. And if you understand what Jesus is about as part of this chain of love, then you understand what God is ultimately about. Jesus says, if you get this, if you participate in this, you're no longer servants who are ignorant about the ways of the Master. Now you will be friends, moving effortlessly in the Father's love. One more story about these Orthodox Jewish people in Israel. I went to the Wailing Wall which is a very holy spot for the Jewish people in Israel. It is the last remnant that they know of, the actual stones from the temple that stood in Jerusalem when Jesus was actually there. The rest of the temple was destroyed, but this is there. And people come from around the world to pray there, and these Orthodox Jewish people were there. They have chairs set up. They have little stands for them so they can put their psalm book on there. And they sit there and they pray and they pray and they pray at this holy spot. And I noticed one of these gentlemen, he was sitting there very faithfully praying his prayers in Hebrew. And next to him, on the chair next to him, he had his little son, 2.5, 3 years old. He was so cute. He already had his little yarmulke on his head there. He already had his little tiny curls, sideburns started there. Now, for a little boy that age, you know, sitting there and watch daddy pray on and on is not the most exciting thing. And sometimes, you know, someone that age, his mind is going to wander. And it was just beautiful that dad, without interrupting his prayer, was still keeping an eye on his little boy. And when his little boy got a little restless, he would just reach out his hand while still praying, just rub his back, just play with his curl a little bit of something, just to let him know, I'm here. I'm paying attention. You're part of this too. There is a chain of love. God's love through prayer was pouring into him, and he, without even thinking about it, was sharing that with his young child right there, including him in it. So, obedience in prayer or obedience in love, which is easier? Obviously, obedience in prayer is. The command to love is hard, isn't it? For two reasons. We find it so hard ourselves to be loved, to be unconditionally loved. We think we have to deserve it. It's so hard to accept something as a free gift, right? But you know, it's not grace as long as we have something to offer. It's so hard to just stand there with open hands and receive this wonderful gift. And what little love we're able to experience in our lives, it's so hard to let it go, isn't it? Because we look at ourselves and think ourselves so undeserving, and we look at others and think they're equally undeserving. It's so hard to stop judging, but it just harms us in terrible, terrible ways, doesn't it? Recently read an interesting novel. By the end, I figured out it was about the relationships of a couple mothers and their daughters, and these two mothers could not have lived more opposite lives. The one had been very privileged. She'd grown up. She'd gone to a good school. She had drives and goals. She married a good husband, built a great house in the suburbs. Everything seemed to be going right for her. Her kids seemed to be turning out well. But as more and more was revealed, it was all this self-drive. It was all this worry in her heart that I might not be adequate. And she was always pushing. She was always trying to control things. And in the end, despite her best intentions, she lost her daughter. She drove her away. That was contrasted with another woman who, through very poor choices in her young life, did not have the privilege of the first woman. She was struggling. She had had a daughter out of wedlock, but she loved that daughter. And the interesting thing is, because she had experienced very early on that life is not fair and she was not in control, she understood forgiveness. She understood grace better than anyone else. And in her own way, she could share that in the world better than anyone else. Only the one who lets go can actually love. Look at this again. The Father is holding nothing back in his love for Jesus. Absolutely nothing. It's just a constant, uninterrupted flow of love to the Son. How else could it be anything else? And Jesus does not interrupt that flow of love. It just goes right through him. It just absolutely, there's nothing that blocks that flow of love. He goes to the cross and lets it all go so that that love can flow to us. Think about that for a second. The love in the world, God is not the problem. Where does that flow get interrupted? It gets interrupted with us. We either refuse the flow of love or we try and hold on to it and not share it with others. And that's where the problem comes here. But the Father does what the Father can only do. He continues to love. He continues to forgive. He continues to choose us. He continues to come at us until brick by brick, whatever wall is blocking that flow in our life is taken down. I just read another interesting book. It was on Eastern Christianity and a practice that I had not heard of before, but it's a real challenge, and I think it speaks to this directly. It was talking about Christianity in Russia the way it used to be, but the author said it still goes on now because it's so ingrained in who they are. It was called the Pustinia. I think I'm pronouncing it right, Pustinia. The Pustinia is a little hermit's cabin out in the woods. And she said that it was a long tradition in Russia that at a certain age, maybe when the family was grown, maybe when you had been widowed, something like that, people would feel a call from God to leave behind everything that they had occupied themselves with, work, the house, mortgages, whatever, and move into this little cabin in the woods where they could simply be open in prayer to this flow of love from God to them. So that there would be no interference, so they could sit there with open hands. And she, the author of this book said, you need to be very careful. They did not go into the woods to withdraw from people, but to be close to people. They did not go there just for themselves, but they went there for the world. They went there so they could experience this love from God so that they could pass it on uninterrupted. And she said, everyone who went to the Pustinia knew that the whole village would know that they had gone out there. And the whole village would know that at any time they could go out there and seek help from the person in the little cabin. They could seek prayer. They could seek advice in their life. If they needed someone to help with the crops, they could go. And they knew that the hermit out there would drop everything and go and be of service as long as he was needed, because he knew that by serving in the fields or helping someone repair their house or tending someone's sick child, that they were in this chain of love and passing it on. Now, of course, the author said we can't all go run off to cabins in the woods like that. It doesn't work that way. But she said we can all find ways to open our hearts more fully to the love of God so that it can more fully flow through us to others in our lives. And we have to find ways to do that. Because only then will we understand what Jesus said. He says, I'm not going to call you servants any longer. Because you will be part of this chain of love, you will be my friends. Amen.